Welcome, everyone, to episode 115 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to be talking about some post-All-Star break storylines to follow. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. Morten, how's it going? Welcome back from London.
Oh, thank you, Brian. It was just such a wonderful trip, really. Obviously, this is going to be my last appearance on this podcast because, you know, basketball and everything. I'm definitely way more considerate and sophisticated now, having been to London for an entire week, obviously.
I've spoken with Mark Deeks. I know people from London are not considerate.
I actually met with Mark for lunch over a two-hour period, so yes.
I know, and I saw he was at the All-Star game, which is great.
He got it right before.
Well, that's awesome. Glad to have you back. Like you, I also went on a trip a little bit shorter. I went to Memphis for a night, but in your honor, I also had a giant meat feast. So
we're both nice.
Yeah, we're both probably on a diet for the next 3 months.
Oh man, I tell you, I was at this Brazilian barbecue. Yeah. And I honestly thought, like, that was going to be the high point of the holiday, like, in terms of eating. And my wife, she works at a place called Sticks and Sushi, which it serves sushi and also meat, like, pieces of meat on a small stick. Oh, yeah. It's very expensive, very exclusive and stuff like that. And we went there because she had, like, a gift certificate or whatever. And that was definitely, like, the best meal that we had. I was getting duck and lamb and pork and everything, and it was just like juicy and voluptuous, and it was great. Just so great.
I'm very proud of you. My wife would be proud of you, even more proud of you than I am, because that's right in her wheelhouse.
Yeah. Well, I didn't eat the sushi though. I do not touch sushi.
She likes the barbecue, the Japanese barbecue as well.
Oh nice. Yeah. Well, you may have come to Denmark this summer, by the way, so we should figure something out. I'll hook you guys up, or rather, my wife will.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
I can't hook anyone up. I don't have the connections, Brian.
Yeah.
I'm an empty, empty man.
Before we get underway talking about the stuff that we're going to keep an eye on for the last 2 months of the regular season, we need to address right off the bat this report from Sports Illustrated that came out last night. John Wertheim and Jessica Luther spent multiple months speaking with members, current and former members of the Dallas Mavericks organization. It seems as though the former team president was, to put it kindly, a serial sexual harasser. Just in terms of, it sounds like in general, office culture was not hospitable to the female employees. That's the nicest way to say it. I would implore anyone who hasn't read the story to go check it out at some point today. It's just phenomenal reporting. It's heartbreaking, but phenomenal work from those two. We don't want to speculate too much, just given how new this is. We don't know how much. Mark Cuban, the owner, he was not accused of any sexual harassment himself. He said that this is the first he's heard of it, basically, and he immediately took action. He fired his HR director. He fired his beat writer of Mavs.com, who was involved in a few domestic violence incidents. So we don't want to speculate today about how much Cuban knew, when he knew it, all that. You know, over time that will come out. But do you have any general thoughts about this whole situation?
Well, you kind of said it before we started recording, Brian, and I just hope that this is not a problem that is active amongst NBA teams or basically sports franchises. Yep. That we hope that this is an isolated thing. Granted, it was an isolated thing for a period of over 18 years, which is frightening.
Yeah.
So when you say an isolated incident, that comes with an asterisk because, come on, I mean, 18 years, man. That's a long time. I will say this, though. I can't speculate on whether or not Mark Cuban knew or didn't know. I don't want to speculate about that. I think what his actions presented right now was accurate in firing those people.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. When you're an owner of an NBA franchise, it's your responsibility to know what's going on. So even if he's right and he did not know what was going on, that's on him as well. You own the basketball team. You're supposed to know. And I know that he said, well, I'm deferring. I can't be on top of the day-to-day. I have different interests or venues or whatever. Well, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. You need to speak with someone else. If I owned a big-time franchise, I would not just let two or three people give me all the reports. I would talk to 20 people, 30 people, 50 people. I would walk around my team once in a while to speak with people. So how is it here? I would go to the lowest-ranked intern and ask him or her, what's going on? Is everything good? I would, it's called due diligence, and Cuban didn't do that. So that's on him. And unfortunately, people suffered because of that.
Yeah. Michael McCann, actually, of Sports Illustrated, he's their legal expert. He had a complimentary as in accompanying, not as in praiseworthy, compliment with an E. I should say.
Yeah, compliment, yeah.
Yeah, but he had a piece kind of talking about Cuban's responsibility as an owner. Not, again, not whether he knew or didn't know or when he knew, but apparently a lot of NBA franchises have in-house lawyers, I believe he said, that work with the HR department to make sure that any claims, particularly sexual harassment claims, are taken seriously. For whatever reason, the Mavericks did not have an in-house lawyer. I believe they had one working with the Mavericks Corporation or something like that, like an outside counsel. So, I mean, that structure may have lent itself to a situation like this. I'm going to pretty safely assume that Cuban will address that in the coming weeks. As you said, Mort, I mean, his actions since they spoke about him, I guess they spoke with him on Monday, the day before the report came out, and then he immediately fired the HR director, suspended the beat writer, and then fired him Tuesday once he figured out or got more details. So those actions, I mean, those speak to him recognizing the severity of this, which is good. And the NBA released a statement Tuesday night saying, you know, the Mavs announced that they're going to conduct an internal investigation with the outside counsel. The NBA said they're going to be closely following it. I think everyone knows how serious this is. And as you said, Mort, I mean, we can only pray that this is an isolated problem with only the Mavericks, that's not pervasive throughout all of the other organizations in the league. I'm skeptical that this is an isolated incident. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we start to hear more stories like this in the coming weeks and months, just as happened with Hollywood. I mean, we heard the Harvey Weinstein stuff and then the floodgates open. So I just hope that NBA teams, the league, continues to take this as seriously as they need to. This sport, you know, obviously it's not just for men, and they employ female employees. They should feel comfortable in their jobs. They should not be subjected to sexual harassment. This is not a particularly hot take, I don't think. It's just the way it should be. That's basic human decency. So
yeah.
You know, we'll obviously keep an eye on this moving forward and see, you know, that it's all very fresh right now. We just can't say much more than what we have. But we're keeping the V female employees of the Mavericks in particular in mind. This just sucks. This is just a terrible situation, and we hope it leads to positive change down the line.
Yep, I agree. Just to wrap up, are you at that point as well where you kind of feel ashamed about your gender?
Oh my god. Because when I feel like, so we know that, I mean, based on the demographics that we've seen in terms of like our, you know, our blog talk radio stats, we know a lot of men listen to this podcast. So, man, I want to address this to you. Stop. Like, stop being assholes. This is not hard. If you go and try to hit on a woman and she shows no interest in you, that is not a sign to continue hitting on her. If you are a married man, don't hit on women. You're married. If you don't go up to a woman and ask and say, like, I know you're going to go get gangbanged this weekend. This is common sense. Like, don't send dick pics. Really, really easy things that, like, no, imagine how you would feel if you were on the other side of that. Just stop. Just, it's really not that hard to not.
Well, that logic is problematic, though, because I think that a lot of men, maybe, I think those who listen to our podcast, I think those are NBA fans. Most NBA fans, I imagine, are coming from a greater place, because let's just call it like it is. When you watch a sport of predominantly black athletes, mm-hmm. I also think that you are very open-minded to different races and cultures and whatnot. So I think there is an element of greater overview and oversight of the worldview when mm-hmm. you watch this league in particular.
Yep.
Obviously, that did not apply to the Mavs writer and the HR president, or the human resources chief there.
Mm-hmm.
However, having said that, there are a lot of men in this world who would love to be in those shoes. I mean, being the guy who gets catcalled by women or whatever. So that logic would probably not work.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've seen a lot of people go, well, you know what? Now it's impossible in this day and age to even get a date. No, it's not. You can still talk to women. You can still ask them out.
Right.
That's not the issue. The issue is they say no.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep on doing it, mm-hmm. or the issue is you touch them when you shouldn't.
Yep.
It's you can ask women out. Good Lord. I mean, yeah. Obviously, this is not about you not being able to ask women out. It's just be a decent human being. It's all about decency and boundaries and respect and this little thing, not treating women as pieces of meat.
Right.
Just this little thing. I don't know. Might be important.
I mean, Mort, you and I are both happily married men. I would venture to guess in our...
Only because I can't have you, Brian.
I would venture to guess that our respective courtships, neither one of us texted our now wives a dick pic or said, hey, I bet you're going to go get gangbagged this weekend.
Well, I flirted in different ways, Brian. So. No, obviously. No, yeah. No.
I think the way you said it is spot on. It's all about being respectful and not objectifying women. And
but
our gender has a lot of work to do.
Right. I feel old now because I started dating my wife when I was 18, so we didn't really have camera phones at that point. So I couldn't even have sent her. God, that was just a dirty move, Brian. I'm feeling really old right now. Thank you. Thank you, buddy.
Technology saved you.
Yeah, it did. Yep, absolutely.
All right, Mort, let's pivot into some actual basketball talk. We are still in the midst of the All-Star break, but games start back up tomorrow. We have about 2 months.
You just said actual basketball, and then you followed it up with All-Star. Brian.
Right. I'm sparing you discussion of the All-Star game. I know how much you hated All-Star weekend.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we won't focus on that. So let's talk about, we've got about 2 months left in the regular season. Mort, what are you keeping an eye on as we hit the home stretch?
Golden State taking off, hopefully soon.
Mm-hmm.
They are second in the West behind Houston at this point. Look, it's not like I expect them to go out and say, oh, we want the number one seed. I don't think they care. But, like, let's be honest, they've cruised a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
and absolutely. They've been, yeah, not just a little bit, actually quite a lot. So this is their chance to really get playoff tuned, mm-hmm. and they need to step on that pedal pretty soon. This is not some on-off switch they can just go from game one in the first round and just plug it in there. No, you need a little bit of leeway here. And 15, 20 games, that's probably the minimum you need to get into like a serious mindset. So mm-hmm. I am definitely looking for that to happen. And I'm also looking, Houston, I just mentioned him, I'm looking to see how serious they are. And by serious, I mean, are they a legitimate contender to take the whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are they a legitimate threat to Golden State? Because they've lost just 13 games.
Yeah.
Like, we do not talk about Houston enough. They are frighteningly good. And obviously, the big one, we're going to return to that later in the podcast, the tank race, which is on.
Yeah.
And Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, the Toronto Raptors are 41-16.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So,
how an offense can change when you actually insert plays and start shooting threes?
Right. Stop relying on isolation. Who knew?
Yeah.
So let's start with the West since you brought them up first, Mort. I agree. I take Houston very seriously as a contender. I think they are a legit threat to Golden State, and watching those two battle it out for home court advantage throughout the West will be fun. But, I mean, the rest of the Western Conference race, those two teams are almost 10 games ahead. I mean, Houston is a full 10 games ahead of anyone not named Golden State. Mm. From 3 through 10 in the West, it's only separated by 4.5 games. The Spurs are third right now at 35-24. The Jazz are 10th at 30-28. And the Jazz have won 11 straight.
Oh, yeah.
The Spurs are 4-6 in their last 10. Of the, I guess, 8 teams that are battling for these 6 spots, who do you think gets left out by the end?
Oh, you always bring your A questions immediately right off the bat, huh?
Yeah, I'm coming with fire today.
Yeah, you are. I mean, I'm not sold on New Orleans after Boogie went down.
Mm-hmm.
Just not. I love the addition of Nico, and I hope that they find some success in having him and AD paired up in the front court. But you got Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz just searching right now. They brought new life. I think that I could see the Jazz overtake the Pelicans for 8th, mm-hmm. and then just everything shakes out somewhat as it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Clippers get in.
Yeah. That's where I'm leaning as well. I think the Jazz sneak in at 8th, and the Clippers and the Pelicans are left out. I mean, Minnesota, I think, is a lock. I have no concerns about them. OKC... No. I mean, they are worse without Roberson. I think they'll pull it together. Denver gets Paul Millsap back soon, so I think they'll be okay.
Yep.
If Kawhi doesn't come back soon, though, I'm a little worried about the Spurs.
Wow, and like as a missing the playoffs worried?
Yeah, I mean, they're only three and a half games ahead of the Clippers right now. I know they have a cushion, but... Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the Spurs, though.
I know the Spurs, like, the mystique of the Spurs is that Popovich will just always somehow coach them to 50 wins and they'll make the playoffs, but I'm a little worried. I'll admit it. I don't necessarily think they're going to miss the playoffs. Yeah. But I don't think they're a secure top 4 seed by any means. It wouldn't surprise me to see them in the 6-7-8 range. If I mean, again, we don't know when Kawhi comes back. If he comes back, you know, this week, erase all of that. He'll, you know, if he stays healthy over these last 20 some games, they're good. But if
Rudy Gay comes back soon,
I just it wouldn't totally shock me if the Spurs even if they make the playoffs, if they're in that lower range rather than the secure top four seed that we projected them as before the season started.
But you know what's going to happen, right, if they miss the playoffs? They're going to win the lottery. They're going to take DeAndre Ayton, and that's just, yep.
Yeah, in true Spurs fashion, you're probably
right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So in which case, if that happens, I'm good.
Yeah, right. I guess it's a win either way. All right, let's switch to the East then, Mort. You brought up the Raptors, who I agree. I mean, they're right now the number one seed in the East. They have a two-game lead over the Celtics at two.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised to see Toronto keep that number one seed heading into the playoffs. But again, this is not as closely contested as the West, but you've got between 4 and 9 in the East. It's only a 5-game separation between the Wizards, who are fourth right now at 33-24, and the Pistons, who are ninth at 28-29.
Right.
Do you think the Pistons can sneak in and push out the Sixers or the Heat? I mean,
it'd be pretty bad if they didn't, given that they traded for Blake effing Griffin.
Right.
And Miami. I'm sorry, I'm just not sold on Miami yet. I'm really not.
They lost to a Joel Embiid-less 76ers team.
I think I'd make that switch. I mean, Detroit for Miami. In the eighth seed.
Mm-hmm.
Philly, I'm pretty certain they'll stay in. Milwaukee, obviously, as well. Indiana, who's been the big surprise this year. Yeah, and kind of like how it shakes out there, just with the Detroit-Miami swap. But having said that, it wouldn't surprise me if Miami stayed the course and just overtook Detroit. But I'm leaning to Detroit because I think there is like a small time period where you have to integrate Blake, and then when that's done, I think they get on a roll. And when I say on a roll, I mean Eastern Conference type of roll, like right. five out of seven or something, you know.
Right.
So definitely not Charlotte. They're dead in the water.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's only a 9-game or a 9-team race for those 8 spots. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the Knicks, without Porzingis, are done. The Bulls have openly started tanking, as we'll talk about soon. I'm torn between the Pistons and the Heat. I don't know. I kind of think the Heat stave them off, because the Pistons get Reggie Jackson back at some point. So right as they establish this new identity with Blake, they're going to again have to shuffle up their chemistry and reincorporate Reggie Jackson, which, I mean, his return, if he comes back at full speed, he'll be helpful. But we just don't know what he's going to look like or how he's going to fit with Blake. And it makes me nervous to incorporate that many new pieces over a 4 or 5 week span. So I would lean Miami.
Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to jinx the Sixers. Like, I'm still nervous as all hell about the Sixers. Because, I mean, it's like the perpetual thing. If Joel Embiid goes down, so do they. So hopefully he stays upright over these final 27 games. But they do have, I mean, I think it's literally the league's easiest schedule from this point forward. They play, I think, all 4 games against Charlotte still. They have a couple against the Knicks. I mean, they're playing a bunch of teams that just lost stars for the year, which they also, you know, they got on a 5-game winning streak right before the All-Star break, because they played like the Wizards without Wall and the Pelicans without Boogie. They have 2 against the Cavs still, but 1 is like in early April when Cleveland will at least possibly be resting starters by that point. So hopefully, you know, knock on wood, as long as Simmons and Embiid stay healthy, they'll be in. So it does feel like it's between Miami and Detroit for that last spot. I agree with that.
Yeah. And I saw a video recently of Markel Fultz actually looking a little bit better shooting-wise.
Yeah.
Which is encouraging. Not saying that he necessarily returns this year.
Right.
I mean, I'm still pretty skeptical of that.
Yeah.
But it seems to be very mental. So if something just clicks, like, don't get me wrong, like, there's nothing wrong with his legs, for example. So if and his body seems healthy, so it becomes like mostly a psychological thing. Mm-hmm. So if he just one day walks in and says, you know what, I kind of relocated my shot, I think I'm ready for game time, like they can insert him immediately.
And they just added Marco Bellinelli, who made an immediate impact in that Miami game. He's a good shooter off the bench. Their bench has been horrendous this year. So adding an instant offense guy like that, especially who can play off of Simmons and TJ McConnell, and knock on wood, Fultz at some point.
Right.
I mean, the Sixers would have to screw it up not to make the playoffs, but I'm not putting it past them at this point. They're still a really young team. They make a lot of dumb mistakes. You know, everything says, I think I looked at 538's playoff odds earlier, and I think they had like a 97% shot of making the playoffs according to 538, but there's still that 3%. That's all I can could happen right now. More, do you think the Cavs, they are 4.5 back of Boston right now, but they've looked good in the few games they've played with all their new additions from the trade deadline? Do you think there's any chance they catch up to either Boston or Toronto, or are they just going to settle in as that 3 seed?
I think they're going to settle, but I mean, look, I don't know. I'm just guessing because, look, you have so many moving pieces right now that needs to be incorporated, so it's pretty impossible to say. I like the addition from a long-term perspective, but don't necessarily love it from a short-term perspective. Mm-hmm. We'll see. It's really the only thing I can come up with right here. Not having Isaiah Thomas out on the floor is certainly an upgrade. I mean, look, just to be honest, and Jordan Clarkson looks like he's fitting in right alongside LeBron. And I mean, it just seems that these components so far seems to be working, but there's some time left. I mean, something is going to come up eventually because it's the Cavs, so they always do.
I think it would be hard for them to make up that big of a deficit, but that said, they have never cared about home court advantage in the past, so I don't see that changing this year. And I mean, God, can you imagine a Boston-Cleveland second round series?
I'm sorry, I know, but it's just, like, everyone talks about that series. I've seen a lot of people mention it on Twitter. I'm just like, okay. I mean, I'm going to be rooting just for something unexpected at this point. It's been the same players over and over again in the East for the last couple of years, right?
It's Kyrie versus LeBron this time, though.
The drama, I know. You want the world to burn.
No, I mean, what I want is the Sixers to upset the Celtics in the first round so then we can get Sixers-Cavs.
That's true. No, but the LeBron-Kyrie thing, I think it's been overhyped.
Yeah.
I mean, people disagree. People change the workplace and just under a lesser spotlight. But I mean, player beef is not something that I think is high on the list. I don't think they acknowledge it themselves when they, like, go into the series. Maybe Kyrie goes, I'm going to see if I can add another 10 points to my scoring average for this one. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you can't stray from the game plan, and coaches don't care about that shit. That's for damn sure. Yeah. Like, Brad Stevens is going to draw up a game plan, and that's not going to include, oh, hey, Kyrie, on the last few possessions, you just go 1-on-1 against LeBron, and you kick his ass, bro. Right. No, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
And I think both guys are interested in executing a game plan. So, you know, drama, that's fine, but I don't know. What's more interesting to me is to see if Cleveland actually does not make it to the finals this year, which I think is... I think that's probably going to happen, honestly. If there was a year they weren't going to make it, I think it's this one.
Yeah.
And the trades, to me at least, doesn't really change that because, as I mentioned before, you still need to integrate all these guys. I don't think they make that in time. Mm-hmm. And I also think they're so young now, in terms of their depth, that this is not necessarily a playoff-proven roster.
Mm. Yeah, those are all fair points. I thought before the trade deadline, I would have definitely taken Toronto or Boston over them. Now I would pretty firmly take them over Boston. I expect them to still make the finals. I think Toronto and the Eastern Conference Finals will be interesting, but Cleveland's just had Toronto's number for so many years, and I know Toronto changed up their system and they have much better depth now, and the bench guys are actually producing, but you know, in the end, how many times have we counted LeBron out and then we get to the playoffs and it's like, oh yeah, he could still drop a 45-20-15 game.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is not a LeBron point. I mean, obviously for me, he's great. That's nothing to do with LeBron. It's got something to do with the fact that the team does not defend. Yeah, it's got something to do with unreliable, at least last year, unreliable personnel. I mean, you had some role players who just could not live up to their hype or live up to their roles. And now it's about youth. So it's valid. Like, LeBron is going to demand a lot from these untested guys. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, Rodney Hood, come over here. Why didn't you do that as you usually do in the playoffs? LeBron, man, come on.
Yeah.
Right? Hey, Jordan Clarkson with zero playoff games to your name.
Yeah.
Like, do these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the fact that they're all kumbayaing right now. That's nice. I hope that sticks. But I'm just saying, you know, time has a tendency to do strange things. And admittedly, so does LeBron. Yeah. Like, he's not all, when the playoffs roll around, he becomes very demanding in a way that is weird. Because he kind of expects everyone to be as good as him. Passing the ball. Be as efficient as me. Come on. And it's just, that's not how it works.
And it's also not like they, I mean, a first round series, the last couple of years, they've just swept right through. But if they're the three and they get Milwaukee at the six, like Milwaukee gave Toronto hell last year in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
That is not an easy series. Even if, I mean, if Indiana slips down, you still got Oladipo and Miles Turner and Darren Collison and Bogdanovich to worry about. If the Sixers move up, you got Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Like, I guess if the Heat or the Pistons somehow move up into that six range, that's probably the best you can hope for if you're Cleveland. But otherwise, I mean, any of the teams right now in the 5-6-7 range, it's not an easy sweep series. I mean, maybe the Cavs do sweep them, but it wouldn't be a, you know, just route this team by 30 points a night kind of thing.
Agreed.
All right, Mort, let's talk about your favorite subject, the tank race. The Chicago Bulls have already announced that they are basically giving up on the season. I believe they are benching Robin Lopez for Cristiano Felicio in the starting lineup. They have said Jerry and Grant.
Justin Holliday is too.
Oh, yeah. And Jerry and Grant's
for David Nwaba.
He's out of the rotation, right? They're just saying
bye-bye. Yeah, for Cameron Payne.
Yep. So the Bulls right now have 20 wins. The Brooklyn Nets have 19. And then there are six teams tied with 18 wins. Orlando, Atlanta, Memphis, Sacramento, Dallas, and Phoenix.
Right.
This is going to be an absolute shit show, to put it kindly.
Yeah, but it should have been a shit show for the Bulls at least 10 or 15 games ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this movement of them is just too damn late in the season. It's so idiotic. Why now? Why go as far as making it a race? Mm-hmm. They could have done this so long ago and mostly secured themselves like the worst record in the league, because they had got off to the most horrid start that you would see. Like, they were 3-20.
Yeah.
Like, you knew that this was the goal, and then they started winning, and instead of saying, oh, that's a problem, they were like, yeah, let's see how far we can go. Right. I legitimately think there were people inside the organization who went, maybe 8th seed?
Yeah.
Because that's the way they think.
Well, part of it is that they were trying to boost the trade value of Mirotić, which they did. I mean, getting a first-round pick for him was a win.
Right.
Probably Robin Lopez, too. I know they didn't end up trading him, but I'm assuming that's why they kept him in the starting lineup, is to make him more appealing to teams that needed a rim protector and didn't want to give up,
you know, but an arm and a leg. Like, people know who Robin Lopez is, man. That's the thing that bothers me, because, like, do we really need to showcase people who have, like, a 10-year career? That's so dumb.
The NBA is really dumb sometimes, Mort.
That's like, true.
If he was out of the rotation completely, I think teams would be like, oh, well, he's useless. Like, they need to see it every night. I know it's dumb, and I know he has
a 10-year record.
But, like,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure if he got benched for Felicio, that would kill his trade value. Because teams would be like, oh, well, he's not even as good as Felicio. All right, I guess we're not going to give up anything more than, like, a top 55 protected second-round pick for him.
All right, but even so, if they preferred or prioritized trade value as opposed to lottery balls, mm-hmm. that's still a dumb move.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if they kill their trade value. Doesn't matter. Like, at least Nico was fine because he was gone either way, so that was like a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, doesn't matter if you kill Robin Lopez or Justin Holiday's trade value. Who cares? Doesn't matter. You weren't getting a hell of a lot out of them either way. What were you hoping for? Like a late first? Was never going to happen.
I would guess they were probably hoping for a late first for Robin Lopez. Which
is dumb.
Yeah, it goes back to your point that like they had unrealistic expectations probably. But like I would bet a pretty penny that is what Garpax was thinking going into the trade deadline. And then once mm-hmm. the deadline passes, like, this is what happens at the All-Star break every year. Not only with the Bulls, but for whatever reason, the All-Star break is like the line of demarcation where afterward they're like, all right, screw it. We're just going to play all the young kids. Like, go take a seat. Like, last year with the Suns, it was Eric Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler. They're just like, all right, go on vacation. It's March. You're good.
But here's the thing, though. This is the last year where you have a 25% chance to get the number one pick. Yeah. It's actually not. Is it 25?
Yeah.
Or is it 22 and a half? Okay, oh, no. Yeah.
I'm well acquainted.
25,
right? It is 25.
Yeah, okay. And so this is the last year to go all in.
Yep.
So this is the worst time to sort of be on the bubble about it.
Right.
I mean, they were there. And look, if it turns out that they lose out on a top four pick, because again, if you finish with the worst record, you're at least guaranteed the fourth pick at worst.
Mm-hmm.
So if they end up drafting like eighth, where they're at right now, that's the worst position they could be in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't get a Luka Doncic or a DeAndre Ayton.
Mm-hmm.
You won't even get a Mo Bamba or a Marvin Bagley.
Yeah.
Like, you won't even get the second tier draft guys. You would be down in like the third or fourth tier of the draft guys by eighth.
Yeah, you're getting like a Trae Young, who guys are now starting to doubt.
Yeah, or Trae Young, Mikal Bridges, who's a great player, but not a DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic thing. At least if you finish with the worst record, you have a substantial chance of getting a top two pick. You have a 60.3% chance to get a top three pick.
Yeah. And you are guaranteed no worse than four. So you're guaranteed.
Here's what bothers me. We love numbers.
Yep.
We always love numbers.
Yep.
We use numbers to judge players all the time. In stats Twitter, advanced metric Twitter, whatever you want to call it, they are, and I say this kindly because I am a geek myself, but they're geeks. And it's mm-hmm. wonderful. Love geeks. Power to the geeks.
Right.
And like I've seen Twitter threads with literally hundreds of messages just kind of describing Serge Ibaka's screen game. Like,
yeah.
Oh, here are numbers on how he screens. Doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. But when it comes to like the draft, it's like, oh, but no, it's always good to win because that means that you have this element of team and camaraderie, which is really good and it's ethically correct.
Yeah,
you can't. God forbid, Mort,
you create a losing culture that resides
right in forever. 1 year.
Yeah,
yeah. No, oh, poor Spurs.
Forever. Yeah,
yeah. Right. Just look at the Spurs when David Robinson went down. That they became a losing team. They had to wait 2 years to win a championship. Right, 2 years. That was a nightmare. Just 2 years. It's so dumb. And this is where the NBA is really lacking behind, because you see a lot of the C-red crowd, especially for the Bulls, the positive Bulls fans going, well, what these kids would learn is a lot better than going for lottery balls, and if they win in the progress, they learn how to win.
Oh, God.
That's not how it works. That's not how anything works. Stop. That's...
Yeah.
No. No, that's not how it works. You still need additional talent to win. Look at the league. And then here's my favorite part. When you make that point, the same point is used as a counterpoint, which is the 2004 Detroit Pistons. That's the only counterpoint that returns. And this is regardless of who you are.
Well, the Pistons won without a major, you know, squad of stars.
Yeah.
So why can't the Bulls or the Suns or whatever, why can't they do it? Because it happened once.
Right.
That's why. It happened once. That's not the formula.
And they had a three-time defensive player of the year guy. I mean, Chauncey Billups, is like, they had a bunch of above average. Like, none of them were superstars. But
no.
Chauncey Billups, Tayshaun Prince, Rip Hamilton were all, like, flirting with all-stars in their prime. I mean, some of them were all-stars in their prime. Like,
four of them were all-stars the same year.
Yeah. So you still need star talent. Like, you need multiple, even if they are not top 10 in the league players, you need stars. You need
two franchise-altering players.
Yeah, this is not a controversial take. This is just this is the way you build a championship team if you look at the last 20-plus years of NBA champions.
And apparently, just disregard the Dallas Mavericks of 2011, though. Because, and here's why I say that. They were not in a similar position as Detroit. And I'm going to say something that's going to piss off a lot of people right now. If LeBron James showed up in that series, by Mavs, he averaged like 17 points a game.
Right. He was terrible. But they all, again, the Mavs had Dirk Nowitzki, who is, again, a top 10 player in his prime. Not top 10 ever, but like top 10 in the league in his prime.
Hey, on the bubble at least. I mean, not top 10, but he's like, what, top 20 all time?
Yeah, in that conversation. They also had Tyson Chandler, who was a defensive player of the year. Like and then they had J.J. Barea, who just perplexed the Heat that whole series. So, yeah, you need...
And Jason Terry.
Yeah, like, you need complementary talent, too. This is not saying if you cobble three stars together, you're guaranteed to win a title. You also need great role players, too. But, yeah, you absolutely need... Hell, I mean, look at the Mavericks now. Like, Mark Cuban apparently met with his players the other day. And was like, hey guys, it actually behooves us to lose right now. Like, I know it sucks, and we're not going to do this forever, but, like, this is just the way it is. It makes a difference. Like, last year, we finished ninth, and we got Dennis Smith Jr., which worked out. But, you're guaranteed a shot. Like, the thing that drives you crazy about this whole conversation is when people always bring up, like, you know, they bring up guys who busted in the top five and then guys later in that class who hit. And they're like, well, that's just proof you can get talent anywhere. Like, Giannis Antetokounmpo was the 15th pick. Kawhi Leonard was the 15th pick. Evan Turner was the number two pick. So really, you're better off drafting 15th than number two. It's like, no.
Oh, God, no.
You're better off having your pick of players. And then you have to rely on your scouting department and your analytics department and your front office to come up with... Who is the second best player in this draft? We have our choice of anyone. Right. We don't need to listen to big boards. Like, fuck Chad Ford's big board. We don't need to listen to that. Let's just figure out who the second best player in this draft is. Like, groupthink every year always leads to players falling lower than they should, Donovan Mitchell being the prime example this year.
Thank you.
Yeah. But, like, you are better off having a higher pick so you have...
Right.
A wider range of players you can select from. This is
absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
That's just. It's not. This is not like a huge logical leap by any means. This is just. That's duh, right?
Who drafted 16th in 2013? Let me just see. Because I'm thinking like 16th. That was Boston, right?
Oh, is that
Terry? So that was one. No, that's the year after, I think. They took Lucas Nogueira. But that was the pick after Giannis Antetokounmpo, right?
Right.
So, you're right. So, let's just play this one out. Do you think... you're looking at that draft. Boston is picking 16th.
Yeah.
Like, let's say they knew. Let's say they knew Giannis was going to be this superstar, right?
Right.
Wouldn't they rather have been in the position to draft higher?
obviously, so they can get him. Yeah, absolutely. So this idea that, oh, if you fall to 15, you can get a superstar there, it's so faulty.
Yeah.
It's so faulty because, again, it's all about what you decide as an organization. That draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers decided that Anthony Bennett was worth the number one pick.
Right.
I mean, again, it's just... it's all about how you gauge a talent. And this year, there should be no debate about it. Luka Doncic, DeAndre Ayton, those are the absolute certain top two guys. And then there's a severe drop-off from 2 to 3.
Right.
So getting in on the top two guys is going to be absolutely essential if you want to, you know, build on. But I think instead of just talking about this, let's play it out for a second. You started talking about the Bulls. Let's just play this one out. Look at the Bulls right now. Go to Basketball Reference, find their roster. Just do it for me, because let's play this thing out. Okay, so they have, of the young core, they have Lauri Markkanen, they have Chris Dunn, who's actually a pretty old second-year player because he was a senior at Providence.
Yep.
They have Denzel Valentine, who's actually not that good, and also older because, hey, senior. Then they have Zach LaVine, a very faulty one-way player.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have Jaren Grant, David Nwaba, who's been good, Bobby Portis, who's probably not a starter long-term, but a very good six, could be turned into a six-man. Okay, so let's say that's the core.
Mm-hmm.
Then you add the eighth pick and the, what do they have right now for the New Orleans Pelicans? The 16th. Okay, so they get a top 10 pick and a top 20 pick. Nice addition, sure. Like a Mikal Petrius. I went back. I went old school there.
Wow.
Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
Mikal Bridges. And I don't know. What are we going for here? Maybe Troy Brown from Oregon. Whatever. Raleigh Alkins from Arizona. Doesn't matter. A wing or some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fine additions for sure. But is that going to be an NBA contender down the line? Because that team is going to get better. They're not going to be worse. So that means they're not going to be close to a high first round draft pick again. They're not, they're going to be like in the middle of the road, like drafting 12th or 13th next year. What do they do? Do they just expect Chris Dunn to become this franchise altering thing?
Right.
Lauri Markkanen could become one of those guys, but they, you still need more. Where's that second guy? Where's that third star? Zach LaVine? Come on, give me a break.
Yeah.
Like, you need a Luka Doncic or a DeAndre Ayton. You need that. And not it would be nice to have, it's a need to have.
Right.
If you have any desire to become a contender down the line.
And that's true for any one of the teams at the bottom of the standings, too. So, going back to the tank race, like, this is why teams are going to... it's going to be like abhorrent how badly teams tank down the stretch. I mean, I love it. It's hilarious. It's super fun. But like, teams are going to pull all of their vets because, I mean, look at the Sacramento Kings. Do they have one player on that roster who you are convinced is a foundational piece? No. Nope. Buddy Hield's good. Scal's good. Willie Cauley-Stein's good. But like, none of them are going to be the top piece on a championship team. The Phoenix Suns. Devin Booker's great. He needs a sidekick. TJ Warren is not the number two option on a championship team. Dallas Mavericks. Right. Dennis Smith Jr. is great. Harrison Barnes is signed for 2 more years. What else?
That's fine, but yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, the Atlanta Hawks, Orlando Magic. None of these teams, save for Phoenix, I would say, have a foundational piece for the future. Even the Memphis Grizzlies. Like, you've got Conley and Gasol, both of whom are past the age of 30. By the time whoever you draft in this year's class is ready to contribute or has hit his prime, Conley and Gasol are long gone. So, like, all of these teams need a Doncic or an Ayton, which is why all of, like, the... there's a real chance one of these teams goes like 3-20 down the stretch. Just like egregiously tanks.
And that's why, in returning to the Bulls, because we brought them up earlier, that's why when you were in such an advantageous position as being 3-20, you react immediately when you start to win.
Yeah.
You react immediately.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And this could be their Boston / Tim Duncan moment.
Mm-hmm. It's very possible. All right, Mort, anything else you're watching? How about award races? You think LeBron can catch up with James Harden?
Nope.
Fair enough.
It's pretty simple. Look, I mean, what LeBron is doing is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Which just goes to show how even more ridiculous James Harden is.
Agreed.
Look, 31 a game, 9 assists, 5 rebounds. He's already hit over 200 threes in 50 games.
Yeah.
Taking 10 free throws a game. I don't know how. I mean, and fully incorporating Chris Paul without moaning or bitching or anything, just being all about success. He's even throwing in almost a block a game.
He also kept that team afloat while Chris Paul missed almost 20 games. And they still have the best record in the league.
That he did. I mean, and Zach Lowe had some. I think it was Zach Lowe. Forgive me if it wasn't. But I think it was Zach who brought up a great point about the Rockets are actually trying Harden in the post, defensively, like him guarding post players, and is actually doing a fabulous job of it. That makes sense because he's strong as an ox. Like, that's one of the things we keep forgetting about James. Like, he's so strong.
Right.
He's so strong. So tinkering that with him being a post defender from time to time is pretty wise. Mm-hmm. I like it. And that if that makes him, turns him into not necessarily a plus defender, but not being a negative defender, by all means, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's a world in which LeBron catches up to him if the Cavs reel off. If they go like 20-4 down the stretch, LeBron starts dropping triple doubles left and right. You know, they catch Boston or Toronto for that number one seed, maybe. And also, again, I just think it would be funny if James Harden is always the bridesmaid, never the bride in the MVP race. But to his credit, right now, he absolutely deserves it. I don't think the race is particularly close. I don't think anyone has. Right. I mean, I'd say LeBron's number two, but I think there's a pretty wide gap between Harden and LeBron, and then LeBron, you could throw in Steph Curry, KD, Giannis, Jimmy Butler. Like, I think there's a whole mix of contenders, you know, that are in they're in contention, sure, but I don't think any of them are going to do it.
Can I just read you a stat?
Yeah.
Or a couple stats from Houston's season, which I just find so impressive. So they're number one in the league in three-pointers made and attempted, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They're making almost 16 threes a game.
Lord.
They're obviously 30th in the league in both two-point field goals made and attempted.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the key. They're second in two-point field goal percentage.
Wow.
So whenever they take a two-point field goal, they do it efficiently.
Yeah.
I love that. I love how they are going crazy. They're only 11th in three-point field goal percentage because they know that that's a stat that can bounce a lot because it's a tough shot. The three-pointer is a tough shot, so that can bounce. But they've clinically gone after high percentage twos to sort of have this thing that can fall back on.
Yeah, and that would be useful.
And I love that.
Because that's what, I mean, the Spurs last year in the playoffs, that was their strategy. Guard them at the three-point line, force them into the mid-range twos they don't want to take. And they didn't have anyone who was used to doing that. Now, Chris Paul, that's been his bread and butter for years, so maybe that's the answer. But, yeah, as you said, it's something to fall back on, especially as we start looking at potential playoff matchups down the line.
Oh, they have a plan C too, Brian, because they're third in the league in free throw attempts per game as well. They are exceptional at every three, like 1, 2, and 3 pointers.
Mm-hmm.
They're exceptional. And I mean, we're looking at one of the great offensive teams of all time. So to everyone out there, enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be it'll be fun seeing the Rockets over these last 20 games or so. More quickly on the Rookie of the Year race, still very close between Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell.
Oh yeah.
How do you think I'm not going to say who do you think wins it because there's not an answer right now. We still have 20 games, but what do you think goes into deciding it?
Oh, unfortunately, assists. If you know where I'm going with this, because the assist is apparently an almighty tool for vote getters. And I'm not going to downplay Ben Simmons' significance in terms of his assist department. He's 6'10 and he's racking up, what, 7.5? I don't have his stat line right up. 7.5 assists a game.
Yeah.
And then people are kind of crapping on Mitchell's 3.5, even though that's not his role. I think their roles are so different.
Yeah.
And ironically, I think they would fit so well together. that's kind of the beauty of it. Ben Simmons setting up Donovan Mitchell all night long, that would be so fun.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be a huge factor. And then a lot of guys are talking about how Ben Simmons' defense is otherworldly. I would agree with that. But I disagree with the notion of trying to downplay Mitchell's ability on that end, because he's been given such a large offensive role that I don't like he's basically having to Trae Young it sometimes out there, where he's asked to do so much offensively that you can't ask more of him defensively.
Yep.
And yet I've still seen games where he's dropping 30 and actually playing lockdown defense in the late stages of a game. Like, this guy is going to be a true two-way player.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can hit from the line, shoot the three ball, and create something offensively for himself, like, there, he doesn't really have an offensive weakness. That's why I pick him. But Ben Simmons, I wouldn't be surprised one bit if he wins it. I think what he's doing, given the fact that he's limited as a jump shooter, how he's been able to overcome that is out of this world.
Totally agree with that.
Like, really, I mean, that's the part where we should really look at him for, because he's got a problem not being able to hit jump shots. He's also got a problem with the three throws. But good Lord, that man understands, I have these limitations, so I'm going to play within this little circle of boundaries that I know that I don't break out of.
And
respect that.
It looked like he was hitting a wall after about, I think, 25 or 30 games. His stats started to go down a little bit because it looked like teams had started to figure out how to guard him, knowing that he didn't want to shoot jumpers. And then he made adjustments, and now he's killing it again. I mean, it's unreal what he's at. But again, to your point, so is Donovan Mitchell. Both of them are playing at an otherworldly level, especially for rookies. I came up with the idea on Twitter recently, because this debate is going to get old very quickly, and we will be having it at least one more time at the end of the season as well. Instead, I think we should retroactively award Ben Simmons last year's Rookie of the Year award, because that race sucked, and then give it to Donovan Mitchell this year, because I think I said it was a hate crime against basketball that Malcolm Brogdon is going to be a Rookie of the Year, and one of these two guys, both of whom are so much more deserving than anyone last year.
I think I may have a better idea.
What's that?
It's been 18 years since someone shared the award.
Yep, co-rookies.
Steve, we had Jason Kidd and Grant Hill in 95, then we had Elton Brand and Steve Francis in 2000. It's time, America.
Yeah.
It's time for another shared Rookie of the Year award. Yeah. It's time.
Both of them are absolutely deserving, and I would not be upset. Yep. If, like, Jason Tatum won, I would be furious. No offense to Jason Tatum, who's been having a great year, but there's no way. It's either Ben Simmons
I have a or story.
Donovan Mitchell. Oh, yeah?
I have a story for you.
Oh, boy.
I made a poll on... I own a Danish basketball site, and that site has a Facebook page, and I ran a poll about, you know, who's going to win the Rookie of the Year award. And I chose Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell as the two options. I got like five or six messages immediately. Where's Jason Tatum? Like, are you kidding me right now? Are you kidding me right now? God. No. I mean, look, much love to Boston fans, but this is ridiculous. The love that he's getting. I mean, look, it's warranted. He's a fantastic player. I have no ill will towards Jason Tatum, but he's just not this year in the same ballpark as Donovan Mitchell or Ben Simmons. Stop yourselves. Stop yourselves. It's like he might become as good as those guys. I wouldn't even be surprised if he did. He's wonderful. He's exceptional, but he's not there. Yeah. He's if he won Rookie of the Year, everyone would look at that, would go back in the history books and go, how did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Tatum will be he should be a unanimous first team all rookie selection.
I have no beef with that.
But yeah, if he wins over Simmons and Mitchell, either he went on like a 20 game heater where he's dropping 40 a night and putting up a triple double every night, or like Simmons and Mitchell both tore their ACL this week.
Right.
I mean,
you're right. I mean, the thing is, people argue, oh, he's 19. You're absolutely right. That is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to downplay that at all. But that doesn't mean he's the best rookie.
Right. Yeah. That just. Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Okay. Should we touch on Rich Cho briefly?
Oh, let's. That's a weird situation, isn't it?
Yeah. So the Charlotte Hornets recently announced that they will not be renewing the contract of Rich Cho, their general manager. They said they're going to start the search immediately, which makes me wonder if they just don't have a GM right now. And I was thinking that's really weird, but then I guess now that the trade deadline's over, like, I guess you don't really need one. If you're going to go GMless, this is the time to do it when you still have plenty of time before free agency and the draft.
Yep.
It's better than Cleveland's plan last year of 5 days before free agency, let's not renew the contract of our GM.
Yeah, this should be GM firing season. Really.
Yeah.
It just makes so much sense. Yeah.
So apparently they are interested in bringing Mitch Kupchak, former Lakers GM, in a serious, significant front office role. I'm not sure whether that's GM.
You were so close.
Just some advisor role. We don't know. This is a report from Adrian Wojnarowski. Thoughts on this whole situation, Mort?
I mean, look, if you want to fire Rich Cho because you think he did a bad job, fine. I don't know where to stand on this because apparently, you know, Sam Vecenie put up a tweet saying I've heard that Cho was not in favor of doing all these very costly moves.
Yep.
And if that's true, then, you know, it becomes a he said situation. But if you are absolutely going to fire him and go for someone else, what I don't get is that the name turning up is Mitch Kupchak.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're at this point now where it's so weird to rehash old names.
Yeah.
You see it in coaching circles. This is more or less a done issue. Like the coaches of the 90s and the double zeros, they're gone now. Mm-hmm. They have been replaced by younger, more hungry coaches who are analytically inclined, understand the mindset of a player, maybe have a little bit more knowledge of psychology behind them. They're different. It's a new breed of coaches.
Right.
Yeah, we have some mainstays, but that's going to end up real soon. I don't think, like, for example, if Doc gets fired, I don't think he ever gets a head coaching gig again. I don't think he ever gets one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that same logic should apply to GMs.
I
think so too. I mean,
yeah.
And Kupchak, like, he wasn't problem free.
No. I mean, he oversaw the latest run of Lakers titles, if I'm not mistaken. But he also handed out two of the five worst contracts in free agency on Twitter. But now thinking back, I think it's two of the three. I think it was Mozgov and Deng. Yeah. And then I think Noah is the other one. I can't think of any contracts worse than Mozgov and Deng.
I would agree. That's two of three. Yep. Yep.
Maybe Evan Turner. Maybe Kent Bazemore.
Nah, because they're contributing.
Yeah, right. That's what I think. So, I mean, maybe that's just a weird one-time scenario. But if you're firing Rich Cho because he thought you locked yourself into purgatory with a bunch of long-term deals, and now you're bringing on a guy who literally just locked the Lakers, not into purgatory, because those were the only two bad contracts they signed and they got out of Mozzie's already, but, you know, that hindered the Lakers' rebuild because of the contracts he signed in free agency.
Yep.
Get out of there, Kemba. Run away as fast as you can.
It's just, it's weird to me because I think there's more meat to the bone on this one. I think at some point we're going to get a story, Ramona Shelburne or Lee Jenkins or whatever, and we're going to find out what exactly happened. Because if Rich Cho actually went out or went to ownership or everyone and said, you know, I don't support handing Cody Seller $56 million. I don't want to hand out what was the deal that Batum signed? It was 72 guaranteed.
I think it was 124.
Oh yeah, yeah, 5 years, 120. It says here on Basketball Reference. Yeah,
there you go.
I'm not in favor of signing Marvin Williams to 4-year, $55 million.
Yeah,
I mean, and then it was done anyway.
Right.
Then it. Firing him seems counterintuitive. Like, then that should not be the problem. Then you should actually be releasing the stranglehold you had on him, because you put him in a stranglehold if you overrule him, and you should go, you know what? Freedom. You decide everything. Like, he was good in Portland.
Yeah, I think he's a good GM. I think Charlotte's... Yeah. I think you're right, Mort. There's more to the story that we don't know, so I don't want to say Charlotte is necessarily making a mistake. I think it is clear that Cho's vision for the team is not aligned with Michael Jordan's vision for the team. So it's probably best that they go their separate ways. But if Jordan's vision for the team is lock ourselves into contracts and become mediocre, Godspeed to all Charlotte fans for these next couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Mort. I think it's time. We need to give everyone a warning in advance that we are about to delve into the political territory. So if you are easily triggered, please tune out now. But we need to address this because it was a big story last week and will continue to be a big story moving forward. So Thursday, Uninterrupted published or put out a video with LeBron James and Kevin Durant. They were like doing this little skit where they're getting an Uber ride from Kerry Champion, and they're just talking about a bunch of different subjects, during which Donald Trump came up, and LeBron James said, I'm going to quote his words exactly, the number one job in America, the appointed person is someone who doesn't understand the people. And he also described some of the president's comments as, quote, laughable and scary. So, naturally, Fox News caught wind of this. Laura Ingraham went on the air Thursday, and more or less the essence of her comments was shut up and dribble. Stop talking about politics. Somewhere...
Yep.
I'm interested in your perspective, especially because you are, you know, you're obviously in Denmark. You are an outsider from this whole stick to sports nonsense. LeBron during All-Star Weekend says, you know, we will not shut up and dribble. I'm not going to stick to sports. Draymond Green said it. KD said it. A bunch of NBA players during All-Star Weekend came out and basically just said no to Laura Ingraham. But like What is this look like from afar? Like, what is your take on all of this?
Well, we do have those type of people over here as well. You know, whenever an athlete speaks up about anything, it's about, well, kick a football instead, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, though, that when we have Danish athletes doing these things, it's only it doesn't become worldwide news. Mm-hmm. So the scope is different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to ignore, you know, football fans here who crab on some dude in the major leagues here because it's not a global thing.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't really care what everyone else is thinking. I care what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing a person, let's just underline person, not a player, a person.
Mm-hmm.
Who is an American citizen?
Yep.
Speak out about the American president.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of getting told you cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that is just oppression?
Yeah.
That's an attempt at oppressing an American citizen to speak out about his political values or political ideals or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, regardless of what you do. If you are a citizen of a certain country, you should have the right to speak out about whatever you want to speak out about.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And for LeBron to post a picture where it says, I'm more than an athlete,
mm-hmm.
was so awesome.
Yeah.
And something I fully support because he is. That's not his definition. So what? He can only utter, you know, talk about the political landscape after he retires?
Right.
Or at that point, Fox News, does he become a retired basketball player and thus is not capable of speaking about anything else? What about what was the guy, Bill Bradley, who played for the Knicks in the 70s? Mm. He became a politician, right?
Yeah. Right.
It's
almost like nuance is required and that people can think outside of their profession. Like,
oh, but you don't have nuance anymore.
Not anymore, no. I mean, so if you were on Twitter at all the last week, I'm sure you saw, you know, people were retweeting Laura Ingraham commenting on a bunch of sports related things. I guess she's a DC sports fan, so she was commenting on like the Redskins and the Nationals and the Capitals and the Wizards. And then people were like, "Oh, well, you should probably stick to politics. You can't talk about sports. That you're violent. Shut up and stick to politics." Also, Fox News has brought on a number of non-political contributors over the years. Ted Nugent, the guy from Duck Dynasty, to talk about like immigration and taxes. I mean, the hypocrisy of that channel in general is just, it never ceases to amaze. And, you know, in Laura Ingraham especially, obviously people were very quick to say, like, this shit is racist. You are just blowing a dog whistle right now. And her response was, no, this has been my shtick for years. Like, I've been telling people to shut up and blank for, you know, multiple years. Unfortunately, she didn't consider the context of these particular comments. Because at one point she said something, I don't remember the exact line, so I'm not quoting her here. But she said something like, must they always do that? And like, I could hear the fucking whistle there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, don't try, like, Laura Ingraham, don't try to act like that shit wasn't racist. That was 100% fueled by race. The difference between LeBron speaking out and all of these people you've had on Fox News speaking out is that 99% of those people are white and LeBron is black.
Yep.
Like, that's what it comes down to. And I think it's that conversation that LeBron and KD was having with Kerry Champion was illuminating because all three of them are black, successful Americans who feel threatened by this president. And they're giving a voice to millions of other Americans who likewise feel this way but don't have the platform to speak out. Like, I think it's very powerful that they are using their platform in this way.
Can we just be honest about this whole thing? It's simply because Fox News predominantly or entirely Republican.
Yeah.
They are just not interested in hearing what a Democrat is up to say. LeBron is speaking to Democrats here.
Yep.
That's what he's doing. He's giving Democrats a voice, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are a Republican Party, honestly, which at this point Fox News feels like, you are going to try everything you can to spin it so that your supporters are at least maintained in this little circle of idiocy. I mean, whatever you want to call it, this idea, utterly stupid mentality of pray first, no action, everything is I don't know what to call it. It's just, it's a way of living that is not fully supported by the democratic way of living, or honestly of people living outside the states. I mean, we Danes, we look at Republicans and we can't understand how they even have a voice. We don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to see some backlash towards that from a very popular athlete or athletes is for them an attack on their way of living. And then the circle goes. You and I have spoken a lot off of this podcast about American politics and how having a two-party system is actually a little bit hurtful, because the thing is, it's just like a what do you call it, like a rope, tug of war, what do you call it, rope, what are you,
tug of war,
exactly. Like, there isn't a third or fourth party there, like, to gather some of the things and go, okay, we actually have a slight different way of looking at it. Because you have two parties going head to head, it's always going to be the exact opposite stance that you have going into something. If a Democrat says something, the Republican has to say 100% the opposite. Mm-hmm. And that's when you go into a system that is so faulty, Brian, that your nation simply has no hope of turning around based on the current premise of that system. So we can talk about America getting, you know, Hillary or Michelle Obama, whatever. Even if you go through the next 24 years after Trump is dethroned, you get a Democrat in there. Let's say you go on a 24-year, or how long it will be, Democratic control. You're still going to have a major percentage of racist Americans who vote Republican and who are going to, you know, be against this. You need to find some sort of middle ground in that country. And that's just not happening with the way it's built up right now. LeBron and KD and all the athletes right now are not trying to create a new system. What they're doing is attacking evilness. That's the way we should look at it.
Yeah,
they're not attacking America. They're attacking what's wrong.
Right.
And I think regardless of how you vote, you should have that voice.
Yeah, like, it shouldn't be a political stance that racism is bad or sexual harassment is bad.
Like, right, that's just logical.
Right, but it has somehow turned into a political debate, which, again, it shouldn't be. And I, this kind of pigeonholes right into, you know, look at, I mean, it goes into this whole, again, stick to sports context, but look at Steve Kerr after the Parkland shooting last week, where, Steve Kerr, after 17 high school students are gunned down in their high school, he speaks to reporters and he says, quote, "It doesn't seem to matter to our government that children are being shot to death day after day in schools."
Mm.
"It doesn't mean that matter that people are being shot at a concert or a movie theater. It's not enough, apparently, to move our leadership, our government, the people who are running this country to actually do anything." And again, the Stick to Sports crew came out and said, "Why is he talking? He should just be sticking to coaching basketball." Not realizing that Steve Kerr's own father was assassinated by gunmen. Like, this is a very personal subject for him.
So it just, and his father was a politician.
Right. So it just goes back to, yes, LeBron James is a basketball player. Steve Kerr is a basketball coach. But they're both American citizens. They're allowed to have interests outside of basketball. Just like any one of us outside of our current jobs has interests and thoughts about things. I don't only think about editing articles. I have plenty of other thoughts and interests, including doing this podcast. That's like, you know, are you saying the Starbucks barista can only think about Starbucks 24 hours a day and can't think about sending their kids to school safely? Like, again, I credit the NBA for being progressive enough to realize this and to let their players and coaches speak out about this as passionately as they have. We've been singing the praises all year of Steve Kerr and Stan Van Gundy and Greg Popovich, who have not been shy about voicing these opinions. Because, you know, we've made this comparison before, but you look at the NFL, where Colin Kaepernick takes a knee during the national anthem to protest police brutality against minority communities, not to disrespect the national anthem or our flag or our military, much as Donald Trump has tried to spin that. He's protesting police brutality against minorities, which, again, should not be a controversial topic. That is undeniably bad. But somehow it got spun into this whole thing about, you know, he hates America. And he was out of the league last year. He didn't have a job because 32 owners blackballed him, fearing the repercussions of signing him. I think it is great that the NBA has empowered some of their most prominent faces and voices to, you know, speak their minds. And there was a report that came out that NBA ratings are up compared to last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the NFL blamed this political discourse on their ratings decline. But the NBA has been more prominent, and their ratings are up.
Because they have the right politics.
I mean, I guess so. It's
no, just... and what? Yeah, but when right politics, it's just they believe in humanity.
Yeah, right. And they just, yeah. I mean, maybe it's just a different demographic of fans are tuning into those respective leagues.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned earlier, like maybe you are just bound to be somewhat more progressive if you're an NBA fan versus an NFL fan or a NASCAR fan. But
I think that's fair. I mean, people will probably attack us for saying that, but yeah. I think that's very fair. I mean, look at it. It's a predominantly black league. Obviously, right. If you're racist, you're not going to be inclined to watch the NBA. Right. Whereas if you're watching, car sports or whatever, and it's predominantly white and it's in the South or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a different crowd. Obviously it is.
Yeah. I remember someone asked Greg Popovich earlier this month what he thought about the NBA celebrating Black History Month, and he said, it's a mostly black league. Of course we're doing that. But also, it, again, brings up, this country still has a lot of shit to sort out with it, inherent racism, day-to-day, born, built-in racism that we are not confronting. So it is good for the NBA to continue shining a spotlight on that so we can all get better.
I don't remember if I told this story on the podcast or if I told you this story off the podcast, but remember when I was in Florida some years ago, I was in a Nike store and I was being serviced by a young black man. I'm sorry. I just have to ask, is it black or as it's called African-American? Because I don't want to be politically incorrect. A young African-American.
Yeah, I think either is fine.
It's okay, but a young African-American man, and he was servicing me. We were cracking jokes and whatnot, and I think he for an hour we went through different shoes and gear and stuff like that, and afterwards, I shook his hand, and he looked at me as I was crazy, and he asked me why? I mean, he didn't understand why I would shake his hand and I would keep having fun with him, just cracking jokes and treating him like a person, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And that just got to me. That's 5 years ago now. And I still had that memory of a young African-American man looking at me with bewilderment in his eyes for me treating him like a human being.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a turning point as well, because I did at that point, I was not aware that the racism subject in America was still there. I was under the impression I was dumb. I was dumb. I thought, that was in the past. People have moved on. Mm-hmm. That's when I started realizing, I'm an idiot. I'm a goddamn idiot for not seeing it. And I felt so bad that this guy did not understand why I, as a white person, treated him properly as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
That just spoke volumes to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, when we see all the police violence and we see the way, people who upload videos that they have recorded themselves of white people attacking them if they're of different color,
mm-hmm.
It's so vile. It's so frustrating. It's so dumb. It's so hateful that what I really take away from this is a lack of understanding of why people would even want to be that way. The evildoers. What do you gain from having so much hate? I don't understand. I can't comprehend it. And I think if we were going to segue into the school shooting, that lack of understanding towards that, as well as school shooting and gun policies, that's where, if you ask me as a Danish citizen or as someone from outside the States, that's where our lack of understanding is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand what these people gain. We don't understand what it is these people are seeking. What do you get from being so dominantly
racist? What do you get? Like, why do you want to stick to gun policies? Like, or not stick to the right to bear arms, whatever. We don't understand that. Mm-hmm. Because you asked me, like, the outside perspective. Mm-hmm. And the outside perspective is utterly confusion towards the way that you run your country right now.
It's fair. It's fair. And I mean, this issue isn't going away. So I think the long story short is I hope the NBA continues down this road, continues empowering its players and its coaches. And I mean, hell, if Adam Silver wants to voice, I mean, hell, actually Adam Silver did. He took the All-Star game out of Charlotte because of that bill that was very anti-LGBT, which is great. Like, I hope the NBA stays as progressive as it has been. I think having a black woman in charge of the Players Association will only help in that regard. Yep. I think I think she will be a driving force in that conversation moving forward. These issues aren't going away anytime soon. So for having people who are not only not afraid to speak out, but like just, I mean, the comparison between this versus Michael Jordan's Republicans buy shoes too, you know?
Like, yeah.
I really admire the ones that, yeah, it might cost them some potential business avenues down the line. And for them to put this ahead of that is great.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And just to wrap this up, I mean, I think a new dawn is coming. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a change within the next 20 to 30 years because so many people in power right now are old and are living off 1950s mentality. Oh, let's pray for everything. Praise God for everything. And just a side note to that, I support people who have religions.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm not religious myself. And I mean, so is that. I mean, that's how it is. But I have a problem when you use your religion as a shield or as a weapon or as a way to not act yourself. Like, if you are going around saying, well, God will provide. If you're not doing any, if you're in a bad situation and you say, well, God will provide, and you don't do a damn thing about your own situation, just expecting something to be handed to you, then that's a problem. And I think that's often a Republican trait, which is just, well, things will take care of themselves.
Yeah.
That's a problem, especially because when you have, Republicans are in power right now. So that ideology is suddenly enwrapping or embedding the entire country, whereas the vast majority do not feel that way. They are not as inactive. They are not just sitting around going, oh, well, someone will provide for me.
Right.
So when they react with action and a frustration, and then you have like the right going, well, we don't understand. We don't understand what's going on because God will provide.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that note, Mort, we want to thank everyone for sticking with us who did. Apologies that this was so loaded. Hopefully games will start again on Thursday, so we'll get back to talking about actual basketball soon. But thank you for sticking with us. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so if you want to continue the conversation there, please do. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. I'm Brian Toporek, and until next time, joining me as always was Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. And just one final shout out to all the students from the whole Parkland massacre. They've just been doing such a wonderful job in the media speaking out. I think they deserve a proper shout out from not just us, but from everyone who's interested in safeness and actually just enjoying life, because they seem to understand what it requires to have a good life. Indeed. They understand what that value is. So shout out to all those kids, and my heart goes out to all of them.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And turns out they are not paid actors. They're actual real kids dealing with a tragedy. So have some goddamn respect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yep.
All right. Later, Mort.
Later.